Hey y'all, how's it going? Welcome to the show. It's my show, The Scott Horton Show. I'm Scott Horton. Appreciate y'all tuning in. All right, the website is scotthorton.org if you want to stop by there. Yeah, I forgot to join up the chat room. I need to join up the chat room. There's a chat room. scotthorton.org/chat. And then, you know, that way we can all chat in the chat room together. I'm sure there are already some people in there. I'm going to log in now. Also, you can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at /ScottHortonShow. So, if you want to tweet me during the show, or you want to retweet what's going to be on the show, or any tweety type things like that, if you want to share today's status update, I'm at facebook.com/ScottHortonShow, twitter.com/ScottHortonShow, youtube.com/ScottHortonShow. Not much new going on at the YouTube channel. Anyway. All right, so there's a few people hanging out in the chat room. Hey, guys. How the hell are you? All right, Michael Meharry's going to be on. He's from the 10th Amendment Center, Michael Bolden and them. And their game is trying to get the state and local governments of America to nullify. And, what's the other dang term I'm getting wrong? Interpose. I wanted to say interdict, but that's different. Interpose themselves between the citizens, the people, and the national government. Which is completely out of control. And so the plan is, for example, to get the states to, like in Utah, turn off the water supply to the new NSA facility. The federal government has no ability to coerce Utah. It's up to the state government of Utah whether they're going to divert all that water to the new NSA facility there. And they could decide no. And it's up to the people of Utah, perhaps with your help, to make the government of Utah tell the national government no. Sorry, you waste all this money building this giant facility. Turn it into something else. Be like a Sarah Palin sports park. It costs $1 zillion and it'll never pay for itself ever. Yeah, there you go. All right. Still better than enslaving us all with it. And no, that's not beer. It's the Dr. Pepper I'm drinking. You know, I should get drunk on the show. I wonder if the show would be good with me drunk. You know, just occasionally. Actually, don't drink. Might be fun to do the show drunk, though. And another thing about the government that I hate. Right, how would that be different than the show I'm doing right now? I don't know either. Well, anyway. So Michael Meharry's going to be here because we got to talk about some major successes that they've had, including just now, this week. Last week? But a Republican and a Democrat have come together in the California State Senate to introduce a bill to limit any state cooperation with national security agency or national government violations of people's rights, as far as surveillance goes anyway. Right on. That's how you do it. And even if it doesn't work, having a big fight over it is a big deal. This is Justin Raimondo in his article today compares it to Mao Zedong's People's War. You can't take Washington, D.C., but you could turn the entire country against Washington, D.C. The towns and the countryside. Get all of the regular folk, those who lean a little left and those who lean a little right, but just the regular people of the country to stand up for their rights. To tell the national government, nah. and to make it the priority of every state and local politician to get on the nuh-uh bandwagon. You know what I read? Get this, man. Liz Cheney, failed senatorial candidate, she actually was taking the anti-Syria war position and the anti-NSA position. Now, she had gone on cable TV news in support of the war and the NSA. But when she was back in Wyoming, Liz Cheney ran against regime change in Syria and NSA spying. Because she had to. Now, obviously, they could see right through her because she's just so transparent. Certainly, a local politician changing his position rhetorically doesn't mean a thing. Are they really willing to do anything about it? That's the test. And I'm not really big on democracy. But if it has a legitimate purpose at all, it's changing the people in power and or at least forcing them to change how they are and what they do in order to maintain the power they already have. And if it's the case, seriously, where you have state after state after state where there are huge fights in the legislatures about whether they're standing up against federal police or whether they're going to refuse to go along with unconstitutional activities of the federal police, that is huge, just for changing the opinions of everybody else. I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't believe much in the power of voters in the first place, much less to do the right thing. But on the other hand, the people get what the people want. If they want a fascist dictatorship, yeah, they can have one, all right. But if they want to push back, they can push back too. And, you know, it'll never go back to where it was. I'm a Robert Higgsian on the Ratchet Effect and everything. But, boy, it sure doesn't have to be like this, where we all just shrug that, yeah, okay, the government has a permanent record of everywhere we go. Every association in our lives. Updated in real time all the time. Oh, well, I guess that's just the way things are now. No. No, it doesn't have to be that way. And it's true that the government subsidized all these companies to build all this technology to create the modern, electronic era that we live in, the information era. But that doesn't mean that we can't use it back against them. After all, there's still more of us than there are of them, and we're the ones who are right, and they're the ones who are wrong. And I hate to admit it, but I think that consent of the governed thing actually is accurate. I mean, it's an overstatement because it's a consent of only some of the governed, but enough of them. And when the attitude changes from only 5% of people like Congress to 95% of people actually are ready to go ahead and overthrow the Congress, are ready to go ahead and stop obeying the Congress, then that's when you see a real change. You know, the Soviet Union, the USSR, communist dictatorship, and the Kremlin, they never had widespread support. But as soon as people were really willing to deny them participation, that was it. The damn thing ground to a halt. And it seems like that could happen here. I mean, look at what happened with the Syria war, where even Liz Cheney had to come out against it. Because the American people just said no. Uh-uh. And part of that is the weird dynamic of having Obama, the Democrat, in power. Where Republicans, they love wars, but they don't trust him as the commander-in-chief to do it right. And the liberals, they'll support a war if it's cheerled by Obama, but only half-heartedly, because they really don't like wars for the most part. I mean, the rank and file now, the voters, the supporters. So, all our last wars have been really disastrous in every way. More like that coming up on the show in just a minute. But so the people got the idea that, no, you know what, we don't want to have a war in Syria. If you go back and double check what was going on last September, what happened was they didn't have the votes even in the Senate. They were going to have to, they said, we're going to have the vote Tuesday. No, we're going to have the vote Wednesday. No, we're not going to have the vote. And then Obama came out and announced quickly after that that, oh, yeah, no, you know what? I don't even want you to vote. We're going to do the Russian plan to get rid of the chemical weapons instead. Good thing for them. But that was the American people that were against that and stopped it. Well, and the military was against it. But you look at the media, they were the representatives of most of the establishment. They wanted that thing. It was the people and the army that told them no. So it can be done. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for thebumpersticker.com. I created it, but quickly sold to Rick so I could do this instead. In the decades since, he's made one hell of a great company. Thebumpersticker.com makes digitally printed, photo-quality, full-color bumper stickers for your band or your business, as well as magnets, adhesive vinyl decals, and labels for products and industrial use, and your political cause or campaign, too. Thebumpersticker.com also offers full custom graphic design for bringing your idea to reality. Let thebumpersticker.com help you get the word out. That's thebumpersticker.com at thebumpersticker.com. And tell them you heard it here. Hey, all, Scott Horton here for The Future Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation. As you may already be aware, Jacob Hornberger, Sheldon Richman, and James Bovard are awesome. They're also in every issue of The Future Freedom, and they're joined by others of the best of the libertarian movement. People like Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, Lawrence Vance, Joe Stromberg, and many more. Even me. Sign up for The Future Freedom at fff.org/subscribe. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 to read it online. That's The Future Freedom, edited by Sheldon Richman at fff.org/subscribe. And tell me you heard it here. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. Man, who do I got to take hostage to get Facebook to show my post to anybody? And I changed over to this more public businessy kind of Facebook account from the old kind. And it tells me right there, 7 people saw this post. Really? Out of more than 6,000 likes? Used to be 6,100. I don't know what happened, but out of 6,000 people who voluntarily click be my friend, you've shown my post about who's coming up on my show today to 7 of them. Okay. You suck. You know who also sucks other than Facebook? JetBlue. They will steal from you. They're thieves. Also, sometimes their planes fall right out of the sky and kill people. Be careful of that. And also, Blue Cross. Oh, how I loathe Blue Cross. Right before the show today, I was having a really bad day. I'm in a great mood now just because I love being on the radio so much. I love having the opportunity to tell you about how much I hate Blue Cross. I hate them so much. So I don't know if I'll even have health insurance from now on. I may just refuse to pay the fine for not having insurance. And just try to pay for, you know, as few checkups as possible out of pocket. And then if a real disaster hits, well, then I'll just try to sign up for insurance then. And say, hey, pre-existing doesn't count now, right? Because otherwise, first of all, they won't even answer their phone to do business in the first place at all. And then secondly, they've raised the premiums through the roof and the deductibles through the roof too. If I got to pay a $6,000 per person deductible, what is the point of paying the premium and having insurance at all? If I got to pay the first $6,000 of everything, you know what I'll do? I'll go to the emergency room. That's what they're trying to do, the Democrats. They're trying to destroy America's fascist Nazi healthcare system, even worse, so that everyone will just get up and ask for socialism instead. For the single-payer national government, giver of life and death, from womb to tomb. That's what's coming. And I used to think, nah, come on. They're just horrible, evil Nazis, and Nazism doesn't really work well as an economic system. But now I think, yeah, no, I know. That's why they adopted Nazism, so that it would fail completely, so that then we would have no other choice but then to have socialized, completely socialized healthcare, Medicare for all or whatever the hell. And then matters will be so much worse. You just give up. You think getting Blue Cross on the phone is impossible. I don't know, man. I don't know how in the world they got away with this. Oh, yeah, now everybody can have insurance, even if you're really poor. You can have insurance. You have to have it. Oh, and don't worry, we'll give you subsidies. Once you file your taxes every year, you'll get a subsidy kickback for the cost of your premiums. Yeah, and your deductible will be as much as you make in half a year. So in case you get sick, you might as well not have insurance at all. Oh, thank you, Democrats. You're so generous. Oh, thank you so much for raising my premium and my deductible and making insurance for me pointless entirely, other than to escape criminal prosecution for refusing to pay my fine, which I'll never pay. My God. It's the blue in the logo. That's the common thread here. You're picking up on that, right? Whoever's got blue in their logo, they suck. They're your enemy. Starting with the national government. The worst people in the whole world. Worse than the Communist Politburo in China. They rule, they misrule many more than the Communist Politburo in China misrules. So quantitatively, they kill more. They are more horrible than the Communist Politburo in China. And they're probably second place for most horrible in the world, right? Maybe the dictators of Saudi Arabia. The Likud party in Israel. There's some really horrible people in the world, but yeah, the American imperialists and their Nazi healthcare system and the people who wrote it to be this way, yeah, they're pretty evil. So that's my plan. I think I'm just going to not have health insurance. And I guess if I get cancer or something, I'll just die. That'll suck, but everybody's got to die sometime. Thanks, Democrats, for making insurance impossible for someone who, runs their own very small business. Last year, it was really hard. This year, it's impossible. Thanks so much. Yeah, we hired the guys who, you name it, right? They're the Waco butchers. They're the people who lied you into war with Iraq. They're the people who waged the drug war that kills and imprisons innocent people by the millions. They're the devil. The national government, the United States of America, the greatest enemy of life and liberty on the planet Earth. And I know you want to say, yeah, but what about all those butchers in the Congo? Yeah, well, they're working for the USA too. What about the Al-Qaeda suicide bombers in Syria? Well, which ones? Half of them work for the USA. The other half, maybe they work for us in the long way around. Oh, no, but they're going to take really good care of your health care, though. Yeah, no, the butchers of Waco turn into angels as soon as they're in charge of your health care. Isn't that what you believe? You know what? I want the people who killed a million Iraqis in order to empower Iran and Al-Qaeda and get 4,500 Americans killed and tens and tens and tens and tens and tens of thousands of them maimed for life. I want those guys to help take good care of my Grammy. What if my Grammy's poor and gets sick? Who's going to take care of her? I'm going to hire the people who shoot hellfire missiles at tiny little starving children in Somalia. Oh, you're a tiny little starving child, huh? Let us put you out of your misery, cries the American heroes as they tear a tiny little starving child's body apart with superheated shrapnel from their hellfire missile. Die, Somali, they cry. And then what do? Oh, please take good care of me, my health care, please. Oh, I'm sick. Who's going to take care of me? I want it to be the serial killers, the butchers of Somalia. Please help me. Please care for my family, for me. How in the hell did that argument compel anyone ever? To hire the butchers of Somalia. to make sure that American healthcare is run right. I'm starting to think the American people are as dumb as they are crazy. Or is it the other way around? I mean, for crying out loud, man. Yeah, that cop, he cracked my skull right open. Thank God government healthcare is here to put me back together again. Oh, this is what we call social policy. Yeah, this is just social policy, and sometimes we gotta tweak it a little bit to get it just right. But everybody in charge of it just means, well, from David Petraeus on down. Yeah, number six says his Blue Cross plan was not too bad. Too bad they canceled it. That was what happened to mine, too. They canceled mine and changed it to another one that was way more expensive. And the wife, she was still on Calcobra from when I had insurance from antiwar.com and lived out in California. And she's got pre-existing reasons why I had to keep her on that insurance as long as I can, which if I told you how much it was a month, you wouldn't believe me. You would think I was lying to you. Well, I just got a thing in the mail that, nope, that project has been canceled too. Her policy's been canceled too, and it's now going up another $200 a month. And her deductible another however many, couple of thousand a month more. And then I can't even get him on the phone to try to figure out, well, okay, so now the Democrats say pre-existing doesn't matter. Can I put her on my coverage or not? They don't want to do business with me at all because I want to put a sick person on their coverage, I guess. But all right. So I'll tell you what, we'll just kill ourselves. How about that? Doesn't that make you happy, Blue Cross? And the fun part of being on the radio is it doesn't amount to much, really, but I get to have my revenge in a way. It makes me feel better that I'll just always use Blue Cross and JetBlue as the standards of horrible businesses that steal and rip you off and collect giant welfare checks that they get from the money that they stole right out of your pay. You know, on Friday, when you look at the net and you look at the gross and you go, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Look at the difference between the gross and the net on this check of mine. Ah. Yeah, that money went not to build a road or defend you from a terrorist. That money just went into the pockets of big, fat, bald Republican corporate executives at Blue Cross and at JetBlue. You could call them welfare whores in Cadillacs if you want. That's the name of the game in America. That's what's called the American system ever since the days of Henry Clay. If you're rich, you buy congressmen, you get on welfare and stay rich and wage war against everyone else in the society. You create institutions like Blue Cross so that the government will hold a gun to somebody's head and force them to give you money. That's it. It's fascism is what it is. America was founded on it. By James Madison and Alexander Hamilton. In fact, just read the Federalist Papers, especially Hamilton's. And they're all about how, yeah, you guys want to stay rich, right, rich guys? Let's do this thing. It's fascism. Hey, you own a business? Maybe we should consider advertising on the show. See if we can make a little bit of money. My email address is scott@scotthorton.org. Hey, all, Scott here, hawking stickers for the back of your truck. They've got some great ones at libertystickers.com. Get your son killed, Jeb Bush, 2016. FDR, no longer the worst president in American history. The National Security Agency, blackmailing your congressman since 1952. And USA, sometimes we back Al-Qaeda, sometimes we don't. And there's over 1,000 other great ones on the wars, police state, elections, the Federal Reserve, and more at libertystickers.com. They'll take care of all your custom printing for your band or your business at thebumpersticker.com. Libertystickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. All right, y'all, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And our guest today is Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center. That's 10thamendmentcenter.com and also offnow.org. Welcome back to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, Scott. Thanks for having me back on, man.
Well, I'm very happy to have you here and very happy to see the news of all the success you guys are having. Tom Woods says, roll it back. And you guys says, all right, then. And then you're actually doing it. You're not just trying. You're actually rolling back the national Leviathan state in America. Tell us all about your latest successes.
Well, I tell you what, it is pretty exciting. We've got the legislative sessions in the state starting up here this week, and we'll be continuing to do so in the next week or so. And we've already got three states that have moved forward with introducing our Fourth Amendment Protection Act, the full bill dealing with the NSA at the state level. We've got Arizona, which we talked about last time I was on the show. And then this last week, California joined the fight with a bill introduced in a bipartisan manner. We've got a Democrat and a Republican senator that have joined together to introduce the bill there. And then on the same day, a representative in Oklahoma introduced the bill. So we've got those three, and then we've also got Kansas and Missouri, who are doing bills that don't go the whole distance with the NSA nullification, but they do deal with data sharing. Their bills would prohibit the use of any illegally, unconstitutionally gathered information on people from being used in state court. So essentially we've got five states already that have joined the fight to push back against unconstitutional and immoral NSA spying.
Wow, that is absolutely incredible to think of that. And, you know, this is meaningful. I read that Liz Cheney, before she had to drop out of her Senate primary run there in Montana, that even though on cable TV news when she was back east, she was pro-Syria war and pro-NSA spying. Whenever she was at home on the campaign trail in Montana or Wyoming, she had to basically lie and pretend to be against the war in Syria and against NSA spying. So this is, you know, it's one of those things where, especially like we saw really crystallized with the run-up to the almost war in Syria there, where elite opinion is solidly behind the intervention, and the American people in their mass and in a very mainstream, even swing votery kind of way, where just kind of everybody, left, right, and centrists, moderates, and independents, and know-nothings, and know-everythings, and academics, and everybody who doesn't live in New York and D.C., basically, is of one mind on this kind of thing. And it seems like, I mean, it's almost unbelievable to me, but it really does seem like local politicians are getting the idea that they better get their act together and get out at the front of this parade, because the American people want their Bill of Rights back.
That's absolutely right. You know, and that's the beauty of working at the state and local level. There's a much greater power of grassroots. And like you said, it's pretty clear the grassroots are solidly against the warfare state. They're solidly against the spy state. They want their freedoms back. They just want to live their lives. They don't want to be running around all over the world trying to be the world's cop and all of this stuff. They just want to live their lives. They want to be left alone. That's where the great mass of thinking is in this country, and I think we're seeing that play out in these state legislators, because state legislators are a little bit more in tune with their constituents. You get these congressmen, and they go up to D.C., and heck, they don't even come home half the time. They're insulated. They don't know what their constituents are thinking. Our state legislators, you know, I babysat my state senator's kids when they were little, so there's a lot more intimate relationship between state legislators and the people, and I think they're a little bit more in tune with this stuff, and you know, they understand the threat that Congress and D.C. is to their own power and their own authority to do things in their states. So I think this is a powerful movement, and I think, you know, not even just looking at the NSA, but looking in general, this teaches us that we can get things done if we'll focus on localism instead of trying to solve all of our problems with one big centralized, massive gobbledygook in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you know, I think that's a thing that it's especially hard for people on the left to get over, is the fact that the white supremacists of the past basically use states' rights as their excuse, and or, you know, the state's reserve powers and the limited powers of the national government to intervene on those matters. They basically, or on any, you know, matters outside of their constitutional jurisdiction, they basically drag that doctrine down with them, as they were finally you know, destroyed as a political movement in America, the pro Jim Crow factions. And but so now, especially after the Civil War and then the Civil Rights Movement, on the left, the national government has the reputation as the ones who, when it comes down to it, they have to intervene to protect the people from the state governments. And they don't have very much experience, at least they don't seem to see much experience in the state standing up to the feds and protecting their rights from the feds. But of course, with medical pot and other issues as well, the states have done exactly that. But they still, they're very hung up because of the civil rights movement. Even though, you know, the idea that if we really repeal the national government's jurisdiction to way back the way it was, we still wouldn't have Jim Crow come back in the South now. I mean, come on. Well, those days are gone anyway. But it's still right. that lingering idea that the national government is a better protector of individual rights than the states.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's sad that our historical memory is as short as it is. And, you know, I'm not going to make excuses for the segregationist and the racist in the 1940s and 1950s. It's a stain on our character. But, you know, if you go back prior to the Civil War, it was the national centralized power that was protecting and defending slavery. The South depended on national centralized power to maintain that institution, and it was actually northern states that were appealing to state sovereignty and these very same ideas to protect runaway slaves and to battle the horrible Fugitive Slave Act. So, you know, if you go back a little farther, you see the exact opposite historically. It was decentralization that we were looking at to protect the rights of minorities, not centralized power. And, you know, even more recently, I think if you're an American Indian, you're going to have a little bit more dubious view on the veracity of the federal government protecting you.
Right. And you know what? Here's the thing, too, is for some reason, well, I guess I understand. Pop makes people giggle, right? And so it's sort of, it has, it's all about getting high, and so it has sort of a trivial sound to it, just the issue does. But it's not the conservatives who ever, or, well, I mean, there are some, don't get me wrong, but generally speaking, it's liberal types who are concerned about the poor and the minorities and the powerless being completely persecuted by the war on drugs, and especially the war on weed, because that's the drug that more people use, you know, than anything as far as illegal drugs go in America. And so, you know, the national government certainly seems to be, at least so far, they're the last ones to give on this. It's liberals and leftists and libertarians on the state level who are getting weed legalized for medical purposes and now for, you know, any old purpose across the country. Certainly
yeah,
not
right.
the national government. And that ain't nothing. Just because weed sounds silly or something like that, that's not nothing. That's, you know, people no longer being kidnapped and kept in jail and maybe even killed during the enforcement of those laws. Their lives ruined, their families destroyed perhaps, their businesses, whatever, their employment, their ability to seek future employment. It is a really, really big deal, the war on pot, and its localism is the way that that war is being fought by the good.
You're absolutely right. It's being fought and won, and you make a really, really good point. You know, that hammer falls disproportionately on blacks, Hispanics, and the poor. You know, they're the ones that are getting the busted, thrown in jail. You've got young black males who, you know, get busted with an ounce of weed on them, and all of a sudden they've got a criminal record, and then you've got a poor guy that has a difficult time in the job market to start with. He's got a criminal record now. I mean, it's just absolutely horrible, and you look at the number of people that have been caged on the war on drugs, and you're right, I don't think people realize the significance of this battle to legalize marijuana. You know, there are the people that still snicker and think, oh, you know, America's going to pot and all of this silliness, but this is a really fundamental issue. And, you know, even just looking at it from the medical uses of it, you know, the idea that you're going to put somebody in jail because they found a way to relieve their pain, you know, dealing with chemotherapy or all of these different diseases that we're finding that marijuana can be helpful with, how horribly immoral is that? I'm going to put you in a cage because you're looking for a way to get relief. And even on a more fundamental level, when you start talking about the government, the federal government, these guys in Washington, D.C., telling me what I can and cannot put in my body. It's really kind of obscene when you break it down and understand the core of the issue. It's just not about getting high and being able to giggle. It's really more fundamental than that. And I really wish people would wrap their heads around that idea.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. All right. And now, we still got a few minutes before the break. Let's talk a little bit more about this Fourth Amendment Protection Act. What exactly is in there? And you said there are two different levels of it, basically, so far. I think you said Missouri and Kansas, they're going halfway, but even that halfway sounded pretty good there.
Yeah, the halfway is actually huge. And really, the full bill deals with four areas. It deals, number one, with resources. It prohibits state participation or state providing material support to the NSA. So, you got a state like Utah where the city of Bluffdale is providing the water. We're looking at ways to say, we're going to turn that water off. You're going to have to find some other way to get your water. You're not going to get it from a state or a subdivision of the state. So that's an aspect. Number two, you've got the data sharing. And, I think this is probably one of the most significant and impactful parts of it. We know that the NSA is sharing unconstitutionally gathered data with state and local law enforcement. We know for a fact that most of this data has absolutely nothing to do with the war on terror or terrorism. It's for criminal investigations. We know this is being used to prosecute people. With the Second Amendment or Fourth Amendment Protection Act, this data becomes inadmissible in state court. It becomes absolutely useless. So the NSA can share it with state and local law enforcement, but they're not going to be able to use it in a criminal trial. A defense lawyer is going to be able to say, track down where this information came from and have it thrown out as evidence. And I think that's a huge, important part of this. And that's the areas that the Kansas and Missouri bills address.
Right.
You've got
right,
a
now,
third
wait,
area.
We're going to have to take a break here in just a second. So we'll save your other two major points there. But so far, we've got the sharing of resources, such as trying to turn off the water there in Utah, and we're going to focus more on that on the other segment as well. But then, what you're talking about, this data sharing, is huge. In case anybody missed it, the stories revealed by the Snowden documents about the NSA basically laundering information about mostly low-level criminal activity, drug black market stuff, to federal, local, and state police, and having them lie how they came up with the probable cause to begin criminal investigations and prosecutions of people, and on a wide scale. I mean, this is huge. So, hold it right there. We'll be right back with Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center. 10thAmendmentCenter.com, offnow.org. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here to talk to you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In the book, Swanson explains what the revolution was, the rise of empire, and the permanent military economy, and all from a free market libertarian perspective. Jacob Hornberger, founder and president of the Future Freedom Foundation, says the book is absolutely awesome, and that Swanson's perspectives on the Cold War and the Cuban Missile Crisis are among the best I've read. The poll numbers say that people agree on one thing, it's that America is on the wrong track. In The War State, Swanson gets to the bottom of what's ailing our society. Empire, the permanent national security bureaucracy that runs it, and the mountain of debt that has enabled our descent down this dark road. The War State could well be the book that finally brings this reality to the level of mainstream consensus. America can be saved from its government and its arms dealers. First, get the facts. Get The War State by Michael Swanson, available at your local bookseller and at Amazon.com. Or just click on the book in the right margin at scotthorton.org. All right, y'all. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. We're on the line with Michael Meharry from the 10th Amendment Center. They're doing great work on all kinds of issues. But right now we're talking about the National Security Agency, like you just heard in that commercial, the Off Now campaign there for Utah. What's it called again? The Fourth Amendment Restoration Act? Protection Act?
Fourth Amendment Protection Act.
Protection Act. And you say part one is deny state resources to the NSA that they would use to violate the rights of any citizens of those states. And then two, you said, was the data sharing, where the NSA is laundering all their warrantless wiretapping information through law enforcement agencies and using it against people. It would ban that, and I think you said would investigate all that, get to the bottom of that, throw those convictions out or that evidence out, something like that.
Right.
If you could elaborate on that, that'd be fine. And then also, you're going to continue the two more major points in this model legislation.
Right. Well, the data sharing, you know, like we were saying, we know that they're using this for basic criminal investigations. Most of it's war on drugs stuff that we've already talked about. And essentially what this would do is make it inadmissible in court. So, you know, you get some poor guy that's been drug in, defense attorney starts tracking down the case built against them, and a good defense attorney is going to find out where this information came from and dig and do subpoenas and whatnot, finds out that this came from the NSA and was obtained without a warrant, it's going to toss all that evidence out. So it's going to protect people from having evidence used against them that was been gathered without a warrant, without any kind of constitutional due process. So, you know, like I said, I think that's probably the thing that will have the most immediate impact in this this legislation.
And you know what? I mean, I got to say, in my limited imagination anyway, other than like abolishing hydrogen bombs and stuff like that, this is just the most important thing of all. If they can use their unlimited surveillance power against, you know, the imaginary USSR or Islamo-fascist terrorist caliphate out there that they're fighting or whatever it is, if they can unleash all of that against the American people and go on unlimited fishing expeditions against us all, take any violation that they find, and then go ahead and turn that over to any local, state, or federal agency in charge of enforcing those laws or regulations or whatever it is, we will all be, I mean, if in other words, this is kind of the Rubicon, another Rubicon, a major one. If they get away with this, if there's no rollback on this issue, then that becomes license for them to do this whole scale, even officially, to just go ahead then and take whatever they have on any of us and give us all, give them all the more motive to data mine all of that information for any law that anyone might be in violation of, any tax they might not have paid or anything, any association with anyone that maybe they shouldn't have. I mean, we will live in an absolute Nazi nightmare in this country if this line in the sand is not drawn and pushed back right now.
Absolutely right. You know, Senator Kelly Ward, who's going to be sponsoring the bill in Arizona, she made a really, really good point in her press release. She talked about the whole idea of national security and addressing this idea of, oh, what about national security? You know, the NSA is to protect us from national security. And what Senator Ward said was that there is nothing that's more important in terms of national security than protecting and defending the Constitution and protecting those basic principles of due process and you know, privacy and knowing that the government just can't arbitrarily run in and search through your stuff. I mean, this, if you get down to it, this NSA stuff is no different than having some cop walk up and grab all the mail out of your mailbox or walk into your house and pull out all your email and read for it through it just to see, oh, you know, what's this guy up to? And you're absolutely right. That line in the sand has got to be drawn. That is the number one national defense issue. Without that, you can talk about terrorists and whatever other stuff these people want to bring up. That's irrelevant because without basic protections, without respecting the rights of individuals, none of the rest of it matters.
All right, and now so get to what else this model legislation does.
So we got part three, deals with the incestuous relationship between academia and the NSA. 160 schools in the United States right now have relationships with the NSA, and they're under the utopian or Orwellian name of National Centers for Excellence. And basically they're partnerships with the NSA, and some of them are deal with recruiting and training future spies, and some of the relationships are dealing with research and development for the NSA so they can find new ways to spy on you. And some of the schools actually do both, but you've got 160 schools with these relationships. States that pass this Fourth Amendment Protection Act, the full bill, it would create a situation that would eliminate these partnerships in state-run schools, since the states do have power over their state university system. So it would prohibit any new schools from joining this Centers for Academic Excellence business, and then it would also address getting rid of the relationships that already exist. So that's pretty cool, too, because we don't want our kids, you know, learning to spy on mom and dad. That's pretty gross. And then the final piece of the puzzle, the fourth piece, would deal with corporations who choose to do business with the NSA. And you can't stop them from doing it. You know, you can't say you can't do business with the NSA. But what the state can do is say, if you do business with the NSA, you're not doing business with the state. So, you know, somebody comes along and is a vendor for the NSA Center in Utah, the state of Utah would effectively say, you're not eligible to bid for any contracts at a state or local level here in Utah. So hopefully just a way to disincentivize some of these private corporations from doing business with the NSA. And then what we'd like to do down the road is really put a lot more public pressure and begin outing some of these companies that are cooperating with the NSA and put that public pressure on them.
Right. Well, and that's just setting the stage for a great fight, too. If you could get a state government to pass a bill like that, of course, it would go to court and the whole thing, just the fight itself, just like on all of this stuff. If you could just get, you know, we've got these bills introduced here and there. If we can start getting this stuff really passed, that's going to do so much to just bring more attention to the issue. And this is going to be a long, hard fight. But a few early successes like this and give more and more state legislators across the country reason to believe that their fate is hung up on being on the right side of this issue, their political fortunes, that is, hung up on being on the right side of this issue, then, you know, it ain't going to be perfect. We probably can't roll it all back to 2000 or anything like that. Not that it was great then, but, you know, we can roll it back some. Right?
Yep, gotta absolutely. Every step that you can take, and, you know, each step of the way, it builds momentum, it builds popular support. And this is an issue, you know, we kind of touched on this earlier. This is an issue that I think is waking up a lot of people that kind of basically don't pay a lot of attention. You know, they don't get too bent out of shape. Maybe they go out and vote for their R or their D every 4 years, but generally don't pay much attention. But, you know, when you start hearing over and over again that you've got this institution that's spying on you and going through your emails, people start to kind of look up and, you know, pull their heads up from off the football game and go, huh? And I think it's really getting a lot of people angry and at least modestly plugged in that weren't necessarily active before. And I think that's a good thing. If we can get the people to recognize what their government is doing to them, maybe we'll get a little bit more action. And more grassroots action you get, the more success you're going to have. And I'll be honest with you, I really think that this bill has a good shot at passing in some of these states, particularly in California. You know, we've already got the template there, having passed the non-cooperation with the indefinite detention.
Right.
We've already got some good coalitions that are built there. And the fact that this is a bipartisan bill, we've got a guy that is a Democrat that's got a strong reputation for environmental issues and for civil liberties issues, and on the other side we've got a Republican. They're working together saying, you know, let's put aside whatever else we want to bicker about. This is important enough to fight together, and I really think this has a shot of passing in California of all places.
All right, so to the listeners of this show, what do they do other than just look at offnow.org? What do they do to really make a difference on this issue?
Well, I want them to go look at offnow.org, and then I want them to take the next step, and I want them to click on the link on that page that gives you the model legislation and download it, and then find out who your state representative and your state senator are and email them a copy of that model legislation and a short note saying, hey, consider introducing this in my state. I want to be protected from NSA spying. Direct them to the off now so that they can see that it's on sound legal footing, and then follow up with a phone call and say, hey, did you get this? I really want you to introduce this, because that's the key. We want to, you know, we've got three states now and two others with Fourth Amendment protection light. So we've basically got five states. If we could get 25 states, then we're really talking about a huge movement.
Right.
So that's what we need. We need people to send this to their state representative and their state senator and ask them to introduce it.
Right. All right. Well, it's sure is great work that you guys are doing. I sure appreciate it. I appreciate your support in this show, and I appreciate the chance to support somebody who's actually doing something about this stuff and really getting the job done and rolling it back. Like you said, the great success with the nullification of the NDAA military detention there in California. I mean, that's huge. And then, of course, the pot and the gun victories y'all have had and all that. So that's offnow.org, everybody. The NSA's Achilles heel. Thanks very much, Michael.
Thanks for having me, man.
We'll be right back after this. Hey, y'all, Scott here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way, the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon. Hey, y'all, Scott here for MyHeroesThink.com. They sell beautiful 7-inch busts of libertarian heroes, Ludwig von Mises, Murray Rothbard, Ron Paul, and Harry Brown. I've got the Harry Brown one on the bookshelf now. Makes me smile every time it catches my eye. These finely crafted statues from MyHeroesThink.com make excellent decorations for your desktop at work, bookends for your shelves, or gifts for that special individualist in your life. They're also all available in colors now, too. Of course, gold, silver, or bronze. Coming soon, Hayek, Hazlitt, Carlin. Use promo code Scott Horton and save $5 at MyHeroesThink.com. Eh, sorry. Those news segments are too quiet, so I gotta turn them up. And then, oops, music comes out too loud. Sorry about your ear hole. Hope you're all right. Yeah, yeah. Hey, I'm Scott Horton. This is my show. I sit here and talk into a microphone for 2 hours every day. Although sometimes I ask questions and then listen. Sometimes I don't listen, but mostly I listen after I ask a question. Yeah, that's my show. I'm here on the Liberty Express. 3 to 5 weekdays. LibertyExpressRadio.com. I'm also at the Daily Paul on their radio, thanks to Allison Bricker there. And I'm on Anomaly Radio, our good friend Smiles Lewis, of course, they're at Anomaly Radio, and who knows where all else. ARS Radio, I'm on ARS Radio, and I don't know. There was another Liberty something or other, but I don't know whatever happened to them. I may still be on that. I don't mean to sell you short if I am. Sorry about that. All right. You know what? It's bugging me. I was going to say something real smart to Michael Meharry there right at the end, right toward the end, and then it disappeared out of my brain. I couldn't think of it. What could it have been? It's not coming back to me now either. It's over. It's like a sneeze that should have sneezed, but then it kind of goes away, but then that's it. It goes away, and you don't ever even get a chance to get that sneeze out. It's like one of those, man. It's horrible. It's bothering me. Oh, well. All right, so listen. The senator, that would be socialist, independent Bernie Sanders, he asked the NSA, so, you guys spying on Congress? And NSA's answer, as the Guardian puts it, does not deny spying on them. Well, actually, it pretty much confirms. Yeah, you get the same privacy protections as all U.S. persons get, Mr. Senator. Meaning none. Meaning they've got your ass, Mr. Sanders. And so, there you go. We already knew that. Remember? It was in the Guardian story that the New York Times refused to cover. It was in the Guardian story based on Snowden documents as published by the heroic Glenn Greenwald, that the NSA was turning over their daily cash to the Israelis. All of it. And it came with a caveat. Please don't look at the information about our Congress. Just throw that stuff away. Put it in the recycle bin. Please. That's in the NSA documents. We already know. They're giving the Israelis everything. And they're telling them, they're asking them politely, by the way, don't use any of this to blackmail our Congress. It's right there in the Guardian. Wow. So it's sort of like if J. Edgar Hoover had been magic and had all the ability that he wished he had to know everything about everyone with power. Yep, First thing they all never did was cross him as it was. Can you imagine if he'd had access to this kind of treasure trove? And you know what? It may have sounded a little hyperbolic there when I got all hyperventilating and talking loud and using words with hyper in it and stuff. But, in them. But really, what if it became just basically legal? Shrug, legal. For the NSA to turn over anything, and this is, goes back to the original stories about PRISM and all of that, was anything that they get that's either encrypted or that has information about any threat to life or property or that is a crime. And or is a crime. But that means also threats to life and property that aren't necessarily crimes. Not sure. I think that was how loose their language was. That they get to keep all of that. And then we know that they're turning over at least some of it to the DEA and to state police and local police across the country. It's in the Snowden documents. It's hard to keep up with all of it because it's a lot. But they had that project to launder. They couldn't admit where the stuff was coming from, but they'd give it to the state police and they would say, hey, you should pull over this guy on this night. And then you should say that his taillight was out. You should pretend that an informant told you, or whatever it is. In fact, I think they even had instructions on how best to lie and create a false evidence trail. Just never admit that the NSA tipped you, because that would be illegal. You can't do that. But what if they get away with it? What if that's not rolled back at all? And that's the future of mankind. Where the NSA can use their ultimate data mining power over all the ones and zeros on the planet and bend it all toward ultimate enforcement of everything they've got on everyone. You know, there's a book out, which I actually have, but I haven't gotten around to reading yet. I was supposed to years ago. It's called Three Felonies a Day. It says everybody does three felonies a day. There are millions of laws in America. If they had total enforcement of every law we already had, all of us would be in prison. It'd be worse than the worst totalitarian nightmare that ever existed. Germany, or even the Soviet Union during World War II, you know? Maoist China. Anyway, hey, somebody stop them! I don't know what to do. I'm just telling you, you better come up with something, because, man, I think the 10th Amendment Center's got a good idea there, as best we have, at least just as far as public relations. Even if they never get a single law passed, it's still great for getting this issue out there. And getting the people, you know, their minds attuned to this. All we have protecting our lives from the total enforcement power of the U.S. national government, with all of its information and all of its violent capability, is the old law. That's all we've got left. Otherwise, anything that they can do. They will implement against us. Anything that is technically feasible. And if we know already that behind our back, illegally, in secret, the NSA is laundering information about crimes to other federal agencies and state and local cops for enforcement. That could be, just think of that, to its, you know, as carried out to its ultimate extent, where every traffic camera is talking to the IRS and the ATF and the state police of every state all at the same time and making sure everybody knows where everybody is all the time. And any law, any regulation or rule that you might be in violation of that they could possibly tax you or jail you for. I mean, the computer power is getting there. I'm not saying a socialist state is necessarily, you know, going to be that efficient at getting it all done, but it's only the fact that a judge would say, could say, that nope, you can't use that evidence against this person. If you don't have probable cause, then you don't have the right to this illegally seized data, and you can't use this illegally seized data in court. Exclusionary rule applies. without the exclusionary rule and without courts to enforce it based on old law, based on the Fourth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, that's all you got at this point. The tradition of liberty, I don't know. I don't want to say it's dead. It's kind of having a little bit of a revival now, but that ain't it. I mean, it's the old law. And you know, we could do a hell of a lot better than the old law, but it doesn't seem to be going that way. It seems like the time for everyone, for, you know, left, right, and center, and every religion, and every region in the country, and whatever political or ethnic or whatever stupid difference everybody has with each other, that we all just agree that, you know what, the Fourth Amendment that says they can't just go rifling through all of everyone's stuff looking for stuff to get us in trouble for, that has got to stick. We are standing by that. We are enforcing that. We are reinstituting that. If you don't have a so-called, at least, independent judicial check agreeing that there is probable cause to believe that upon further investigation of this person or seizing of their person or property, that evidence of a crime will be found in order to further prosecution, then you can't do it. Or at least you can't use it to further any prosecution anyway, which that's the only incentive that cops would have to obey, to you know, act as though there's a Fourth Amendment at all, would be the exclusionary rule. If they screw up, then the evidence can't be used and their arrest is wasted or whatever. That's the only thing that can stop them from using stuff like this. So, you know, I don't know. Yeah, the judges, I don't really have hope for the Congress. But then again, you know, at the state level, like that guy said, he used to babysit for his state senator. He knows this guy. And I think, you know, it's not like the state governments are really any less corrupt than the national government, pound for pound. But they are more local and more available to us. And a difference, I think, can be made. Anyway, I'm actually accidentally talking through the break right now. So here's a commercial and a half. And then I'm going to talk about Afghanistan for a minute.
Fact. The new NSA data center in Utah requires 1.7 million gallons of water every single day to operate. Billions of Fourth Amendment violations need massive computers and the water to cool them. That water is being supplied by the state of Utah. Fact. There's absolutely nothing in the Constitution which requires your state to help the feds violate your rights. Our message to Utah? Turn it off. No water equals no NSA data center. Visit offnow.org.
All right, y'all. It ain't that bad, you know. My shoulder hurts a little. It's kind of weird. All right. So, real quick, let me tell you about the show's new sponsor. It's cashintocoins.com, cashintocoins.com. And basically what happens is you go to their website, you tell them how many Bitcoins you want to buy. They tell you how much it costs and give you a confirmation code. Then you go to any Bank of America or Wells Fargo or credit union that's part of the, I forgot what the hell it's called. It's not a very good live read when I forget what the hell it's called. But it's a sharing thingamajig between credit unions. Anyway, you go to pretty much any credit union, Wells Fargo or Bank of America. You deposit money in cash into coins account. You write the confirmation code on the receipt and email it to them. And then as soon as the money clears into their account, blam, you get the Bitcoins. And so that's a great way to donate to the show, too. Maybe you'd like to help donate and support to political causes you believe in, but you want to do so anonymously because you don't want it on your permanent record whose political causes you're supporting there, because you've got other priorities, like, you know, a family to protect and stuff like that. Well, you use cash into coins, and it's completely anonymous. You can send bitcoins to support whoever you want and not have to worry. And that's a real thing. I mean, that's how I lost my job at antiwar.com, was it surfaced that the FBI had an illegal persecution investigation of antiwar.com for years. And the few substantial donors were turned into many fewer. Because people say, like, hey, what am I going to do, man? I'm sorry. I love you guys. I'd like to support, but I can't have it on my permanent record that I'm supporting a thing that I know the FBI is involved investigating. Involved in investigating. I left out an in there, didn't I? That was weird. Anyway. So, antiwar.com is still not recovered from that hit. And that's how I got laid off from there in the first place. So, that can be a real worry to people. Well, cash into coins, you can turn whatever money you got completely anonymously into bitcoins and then do with them what you will. Cashintocoins.com, they're a new sponsor of the show, and I dig it. And I talked with Mark Edge about it from Free Talk Live. You may know Mark Edge, and he tested them. He went and actually put a lot of money on the line to test them. He said, if they're going to rip anybody off, it's going to be me, because here's a bunch of money you could rip me off for. No deal. They did not rip him off at all. Everything worked out perfect, just like promised. In fact, the guy that I talked to today, he's the guy in charge of making sure everybody's happy. And yeah, I like that guy. Seems to me, I mean, I'm not saying I know him, but seems to me like he's incapable, that he's you know, very capable of what he's doing. Incapable, that's how I meant. He's capable and that he's very motivated to do a good job at making sure that everybody's happy and the customer service runs smooth. He told me everybody's trying to get in on the Bitcoin business. The only thing that's going to differentiate them from their competition is customer service. And they take it really seriously, that they get everybody taken care of just right and everything's cool so that their name is worth its weight in Bitcoins. And people will want to do business with them in the future. It's the only thing they've got going for them is doing a good job. So check them out at cashintocoins.com. All right. And now, man, Afghanistan. I'm not going to sit here and tell you I told you so and all this stuff. The fact of the matter is I told you so in September of 2001. That is, anybody in my cab or anybody who was my friend or in my family or anybody who was anywhere nearby me. I told you a month before the bombing even really started. Wasn't that funny at the time? Jesus, taking a month to get the bombing started? Really? Huh. All right, well, don't let them escape or anything. But now, here we are. CNN poll, Afghanistan war arguably the most unpopular in U.S. history. Support for the war in Afghanistan, where America still has, what, 75,000 troops or something like that? Between 50 and 100, I forget exactly. Still tens of thousands of troops there. 20% support. And opposition now stands at 82%. Huh. Not sure exactly how that adds up. But anyway, so after 12 years of this, Afghanistan war, the most unpopular war in U.S. history. I got to give the American people credit for that. I'm pleasantly surprised to know that you care that much, everybody. Good for you, man. You know, seems like people would rationalize that, well, that, like Obama did, that's the good war. But no. And then, man, this thing will blow your mind. This, to me, I don't know, man. You know, I guess they do the Jean-Luc Picard facepalm thing, but my preference is Bull Shannon from Night Court. Remember, he'd slap his head like, oh, are you kidding me? I'm so stupid. Or, you're so stupid. Well, so, that actually reminds me of UHF, Weird Al Yankovic movie. You're so stupid, Weaver! How hard is it to win hearts and minds in Afghanistan? Very hard. This is in the Washington Post, okay? This is the mouth of Sauron here. announcing that, you know, guess what? They got all their anthropologists and sociologists together, and it was difficult, but they did some really groundbreaking scientific social research here, and what they found out was that when you bomb Afghans, they really don't like it. And from now on, they pretty much are gonna not like you. And there's pretty much nothing you can do about that. Once you bomb someone that they love, then pretty much, yeah, they're not ever gonna love you. You might, if you use your wildest imagination, put yourself in their position for a second. Yeah, one day I was at work, and then they called and they said that the Americans came and killed your family. What that might be like if you were them. Yeah, no. And then they sent the special zillion-dollar, 15-letter acronym social scientists of the U.S. Pentagon Anthropology Brigade to do the special surveys. And they found that the people of Afghanistan don't want to be occupied by and killed by American occupiers. Can you believe it? No, really, it's new scientific research. Extra. Read all about it in the Washington Post. They did science, not real science, but close. And they surveyed people and they said, "Do you like it when we kill people you love?" And they responded, for the most part, with a negative. And they really wrote this up at the Washington Post. Like, "Hey, look, guys. We did this survey and we found out that actually it's pretty hard to win their hearts and minds by killing them." And they're not kidding. This reminds me of the movie UHF 2. You know, slapstick and all of that. Michael Richards, back before he was a racist. Man. Can you believe it? And then here's the other thing. Oh, man. I didn't even have a plan to bring this up, but I just thought of it, and I gotta bring it up. And that is that at antiwar.com, they ran a story the other day about the child rapists of Pashtunistan. This is part of their culture. Their stupid religion has them so brainwashed, their interpretation of it anyway. It's not like this for all Muslims, but these Pashtuns are so brainwashed by their interpretation of their stupid interpretation of their religion, at least. They're so brainwashed against females that they have a culture of mass rape of children. And it's so out of control. And, of course, the only answer to it is to let the Taliban back into power. And these are the guys, the rapists, are the ones America's been fighting for all this time. And the Taliban, I don't know exactly what was their record on that, if it was perfect or what, but I seem to remember a thing about they threw criminals like that down the well. And they're going to end up being the government of Afghanistan one day anyway. What the hell are we waiting for? Why are we fighting for 12 years on the side of the Communist Northern Alliance that was on the eve of utter and complete and total defeat on the day that we intervened for them back in the fall of 2001? As though they have the right to govern that country. As though they have the consent of the people of Afghanistan to be their harem warlords. The Taliban were mean, but they weren't corrupt. Not like this. And, man, you know, I'll tell you what. I've made it my business to care about the Afghan war this whole time when a lot of people have changed their mind about what they want to care about or something. But when I read about stuff like that, man, I want to just pretend Afghanistan don't exist. I mean, you got to figure, if you got 1,000 different human cultures in the world, one of them is going to have sex so screwed up in their head that that's what they do. They lock all their women in the basement and then they rape each other's sons? What? Are you kidding me? I guess so. I mean, what are you going to do? Humans are just some ridiculous kind of monkey, if you ask me. But the only people who could, which is all of this, I think, sort of should go without saying, this is all the worst of what's happening in Afghanistan. Out of everything happening in Afghanistan, this is probably even worse than all the people being killed by the Americans. And the only people who could stop it are the people that the Americans are fighting. Really, go look at This Is What Victory Looks Like on YouTube right now and then argue with me. Hey y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson is a successful former hedge fund manager whose site is unique on the web. Subscribers are allowed a window into Mike's very real main account and receive announcements and explanations for all his market moves. The Federal Reserve has been inflating the money supply to finance the bank bailouts and terror war overseas. So Mike's betting on commodities, mining stocks, European markets, and other hedges against our depreciating dollar. Play along on paper or with real money, and then be your own judge of Mike's investment strategies. See what happens at WallStreetWindow.com. I had all the music and ad levels and everything all balanced out, and then I changed it all. So, what you get is blown eardrums and I get missed cues. Anyway, I'll be all right back. All right, So, man, on Afghanistan, the Washington Post figured out hearts and minds, no, lost. And this brings us to Afghanistan gains will be lost quickly after drawdown, U.S. intelligence estimate warns. This is a new national intelligence estimate. And this is a big deal. This is when all of the U.S. intelligence agencies all get together at one big oak table and they hash it out. What do we agree about? And what they agree about is that if America stays in limited training and counterterrorism form, Afghanistan is going to go to hell quickly. And if America leaves completely at the end of this year, you know, like in the sacred promise that the president gave the people of this country, I'm not sure what was sacred about it. I decided to throw that in there to make it seem a little more outrageous. But anyway, if he goes ahead and keeps his promise to the American people and gets all the troops out by the end of this year, then it'll go to hell, that is, to the opposition, a little bit quicker. And the thing is, you know what? There probably will be years of civil war after America leaves as well, too. But what are you going to do? Keep propping up people who can't possibly win that civil war in the long term? What sense does that make other than creating someone who's dependent on you so you have an excuse to keep wasting money? But at some point, that's got to end. The scam has been running too long in a row. The rubes are beginning to catch on. And that's the official position of the NIE. Is that, you know, of course, the lead, I don't have a quote here, damn it. The lead, of course, is, oh, if we leave, it'll be bad. But they also admit in here, if they stay, it's going to be horrible, too. An inevitable rise of the Taliban, one way or the other. And, by the way, I want to remind you, well, first of all, Robert Gates, who was Bush's second Secretary of Defense after Rumsfeld, and then it was inherited by Obama, and Obama kept him to initiate the war in Afghanistan and to wind up the war in Iraq. And what Gates did, and I'm skipping a lot there, but I got too many different points about Gates to make, so I can't make them all. But I just want to say that his memoir has been released, and what he says here is that Obama did not support the mission in Afghanistan. He did not believe the mission in Afghanistan. Quote, I never doubted Obama's support for the troops, only his support for their mission. As I sat there, he's talking about a meeting in a Situation Room in March 2011. So this is 2 years. This is a year and a half into the surge. 2 years and change into the Obama presidency. And Gates writes, as I sat there, I thought the president doesn't trust his commander. That's David Petraeus. Who by that time, he may have still been the head of CENTCOM, or he may have then been directly in charge of the Afghan war, but in either case was in charge of the Afghan war at the time. Whether, you know, over McChrystal or in McChrystal's place after McChrystal was canned. Well, wait, but that was back in 2010, wasn't it? Oh, hell. It may have been in 2010. Anyway, either way, he's talking about Petraeus here. In recalling a meeting in the Situation Room in March 2011, Gates writes, "As I sat there, I thought the president doesn't trust his commander, Petraeus, can't stand Afghan quote-unquote president Hamid Karzai, doesn't believe in his own strategy, and doesn't consider the war to be his. For him, it's all about getting out." Well, getting out by doubling down, you mean? That's just like Gates was brought in to get us out of Iraq, right? Even though Rumsfeld wanted us out in 2006. That's why they brought in Gates, was to do the surge, to double down, where Rumsfeld wanted to give up and move on. Which, I'm not for moving on, but I was for giving up. That was one of the things I skipped a minute ago. But I think that this is absolutely correct. And I think that this is absolutely outrageous. I think that Obama should be in prison over this. I mean, how's there not a general strike and just a shutdown and that's it? We're overthrowing this government, all of us. We hate you after this. When, according to Robert Gates, the Secretary of War, the president didn't believe in the mission, but tripled down on it anyway. Went from 30 to 90,000, 100,000 troops in Afghanistan. Lengthened the war by, what, 4 years so far, 5 years, when he could have just ended it. And he didn't believe in the mission. And for a little more proof that he didn't believe in the mission all along, there's this book, Little America, which is by a Washington Post reporter who talks about, here's the Boston Globe version of the article. Here is called, oh, it's an AP article. You know, I searched for this on the Washington Post website, which is where I originally read it, in excerpts of Little America, but I couldn't find it on the Post site anymore. I don't know if they got rid of it or if I just failed to find it there, but I did find this AP story at boston.com. The headline is, "Biden, in leaked memo, told Obama the war plan was flawed." And it is true that back then, Biden was saying we should have a very limited anti-Al-Qaeda mission, even though that was pretty much already done by then anyway. Really way overdone by then anyway. Rather than a giant surge and all the counterinsurgency doctrine and all of that crap. That was Biden's position back then. So anyway, that's what they're referring to here, is Biden in leaked memo told Obama the war plan was flawed. But then the part I want to get to is, check this out, Little America, the war within the war for Afghanistan. In other words, the politics in the White House about the war in Afghanistan. Says, I'm reading from the Boston Globe now at boston.com. Also says that in planning the drawdown of troops 2 years later, the White House intentionally sidelined the CIA. Obama purposely did not read a grim CIA assessment of Afghanistan that found little measurable benefit from the 30,000-member surge forces Obama eventually approved, the book quotes a U.S. official as saying. So that's actually, I think the tense is all wrong there. The way I remember it reading was, this was in 2009, and there were 30, 35,000 there. Oh, no, I get what it is. That's right, because when he came into power in 2009, he did 30,000 extra right off the bat. And then the fight in November 2009 was whether he was going to do 30,000 more and then 30,000 more. Or maybe they did a second 30,000 in the summer, one in the spring, one in the summer, and then they were only arguing over the third installation of troops in the fall. And it was, in any case, it was somewhere in there. But here it was, the CIA was saying, don't bother surging anymore. It's already not working. And Obama didn't read. He intentionally did not read, purposely did not read a grim CIA assessment, because he already knew what it said. He'd already been told what it said. Don't bother. And then he did it anyway. It was in the fall of 09 when Palin was saying, you're dithering. And even McChrystal was saying, oh yeah, the president, we just don't know if he's really committed to this. And no. Trying to end run the president of the United States. And then what does the president do? Whatever they say. You want to surge? Fine, let's surge. You want 90, 100,000 troops? Here's your 100,000 troops. And prolong the war. And then remember this? Does anybody even care to remember anymore that the excuse was that they had this brilliant team of generals in David Petraeus and Stanley McChrystal? And these guys were the masters. They rewrote the book, man, on counterinsurgency doctrine, which is like calculus or some really fancy science that you don't know much about. But don't worry, these guys know all about it, and they know how to take over a country in a way where that country wants to be taken over. What we're going to do, these are real quotes. I couldn't possibly make this up. We're going to change their entire society. We're going to give them a government in a box, ready to go, to deploy for them. And we are going to win. We are going to have a victory in Afghanistan, which means a modern European Westphalian nation state with regular democratic elections and women's rights and stability and a hospitable business climate. Are you kidding me? I remember we went and looked up Marja on Google Earth. Marja was going to be the test case for Kandahar, which was going to be the test case for the rest of the country, which I don't think they ever got any further than that. But I remember we went and looked up Marja and surrounding areas on Google Earth, and there was nothing. Their little village didn't even have roofs. They'd just been bombed, I'm sure, all the hell. There was nothing there. Marja was the trading post where once a week people got together to sell the meager, vegetables they'd grown to each other for nothing. It was nothing. It was the remnants of the town of Bedrock. It was nothing. Oh, yeah, we're going to go in here and we're going to turn this into a little model town of Mayberry. Are you kidding me? They doubled down. They tripled, quadrupled down on George Bush's Afghan war in the name of that crap. The science of counterinsurgency. From the Center for Security, I don't want to promote Frank Gaffney, pardon me. The Center for a New American Security. John Nagle and Michelle Flournoy and all of them. Basically the PNAC of the Democrats. Oh, what a load of crud they shoveled. And everybody bought it. Who bought it? Did anybody buy it? Or nobody cared? The only people who cared were the people who were in on it, and they bought it. Well, that's my son over there. I want to believe. You're telling me that we're doing the right thing, right, Chief? Okay, you can have my son's life. Go ahead, they said. As long as the president knows what he's doing. Yeah, he knew what he was doing. Ask Robert Gates, the Secretary of Defense. He never believed in the mission at all. Ask Reza Khajalakalan, who wrote the book Little America and excerpted it in the Washington Post. He refused to read the CIA assessment about what a hopeless fool's errand it all was. The same assessment that's now leaking again in the Washington Post. That the fight was to prop up illegitimate power that has no basis of support and can't possibly live without American welfare and American guns, and maybe not even then. You've been betrayed by the Democrats. And on Afghanistan, worse than Bush even. You've been betrayed by the Democrats. Why does the U.S. support the tortured dictatorship in Egypt? Because that's what Israel wants. Why can't America make peace with Iran? Because that's not what Israel wants. And why do we veto every attempt to shut down illegal settlements on the West Bank? Because it's what Israel wants. Seeing a pattern here? Sick of it yet? It's time to put America first. Support the Council of the National Interest at councilforthenationalinterest.org and push back against the Israel lobby and their sock puppets in Washington, D.C. That's councilforthenationalinterest.org. All right. Welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. And, Oh, yeah. So I never answered the question. But why, Scott? Why would Barack Obama quadruple down on a war that he knew was hopeless? Politics, that's why. Because Barack Obama is a teeny tiny little bitty coward. Because he's a pathetic waste of life. He's the worst person on the planet, that's why. Because he was afraid that he would lose his power if he did not escalate that war. He knew he couldn't win the war. Let me tell you something. Win the war in Afghanistan doesn't mean anything to anyone who actually knows anything about Afghanistan. Now, if you're willing to completely outsource all of your foreign policy to whoever's in charge and just, yeah, we ought to win that thing over there, and you're willing to settle for whatever that might mean or something, then, okay, I can't do nothing for you, man. But if you know anything at all about who's who in Afghanistan, then you know that the Pentagon is just the Federal Reserve of political power over there. And they've propped up a gigantic bubble. And the bubble's going to pop. There's going to be a correction. Because nobody wants to be ruled by Dostum. Or by Karzai. Or by Gulbuddin Hekmatyar. Although all of those different warlords, and there's more of them than that, and then all the Taliban guys too, all of those guys want all the power that there is. And the ones who are in charge now are the ones who have the least of their own natural power. I mean, natural as it can be in the situation, you understand what I mean? Hamid Karzai's authority has an artificially high price, and that bubble's gonna pop. Eventually, interest rates gotta go up. If I'm not mixing my metaphor too poorly for you, which I would understand if you thought that I did, but had. So, anyway. So, if it's the least popular war ever, and if it's now officially the history of the world in the Washington Post version of the truth that we already knew that Obama didn't believe in the mission, and now we have confirmation of that from his former Secretary of Defense, who went ahead and implemented the mission anyway, half-heartedly, as the president would have it. Can't we end it now? Why do we have to keep having the war after the whole thing has been outed as a fraud? It's like if Bernie Madoff was allowed to just go ahead and keep doing business anyway, even though everybody knows that, nah, it was all a pyramid scheme. The only reason he was getting such great returns is because he was stealing from other people and blowing all the profits on coke and whores. But that's all right. No, he's still the king of Wall Street. Yeah, no, everybody loves that guy. What? Yeah, there's got to be some accountability even on Wall Street. So in this case, Obama is the Bernie Madoff. Obama and Karzai together, I guess. They're the giant pyramid scheme of the bubble of Northern Alliance power in Kabul. It's time for them to be led away in handcuffs and let the chips fall where they may, right? How can you have the former Secretary of Defense say, yeah, the president never believed in the mission, and then that same president gets to keep having that mission after an admission like that? Does that seem right to you, or that's it? Are there any lines that these people can't cross anymore? Come on. Somebody else, Buck, somebody stop them. You know, the thing is, too, is Ron Paul could have been the president. And I know he couldn't have been the president, but he could have, right? In one way, they'd have never let him be the president. Never. But on the other hand, if the American people had really got it and had really agreed and wanted it, he could have been the president. He could have been the nominee of both parties. That's what the people of America wanted. And that would have been the end of all of this. And when everybody said, oh, man, ending the Iraq war is one thing, but you can't end two wars, Ron would have just thrown up one hand to shoo them away. And would have went, yeah, I don't care about that. I'm ending all the wars. That's it. Simple as that. He would have ended it all. They asked him over and over, what would you do? Your first thing, if you were able to become president, what would be the first thing you would do? And he would, in fact, I remember they caught him off guard the first time they asked him that. And he went, well, I guess I would call the admirals and tell them to sail their boats further away from Iran and stop threatening Iran. That was his first priority. What would you do about Iraq? How to end the Iraq war properly? How to end the Afghan war properly? Pack up the guys on their planes and on their boats and bring them home. And that's it. Security guarantee for everyone. We won't attack you. That's our new national security strategy. We won't attack you. We're the Americans. Peace, commerce, and honest friendship with all. Entangling alliances with none. What are you going to do? That's the same thing Harry Brown would have done, too. If only that's what the American people really wanted. For that matter, that's what Dennis Kucinich or Michael Gravel would have done, too. They would have just ended the wars. And if the admirals and the generals didn't like it, and if the CIA didn't like it, he would say, you can turn in your resignations. Or you can implement your orders. That's it. It's over. National security state, done. Now we can be a normal country in a normal time. Or even an exceptional country in an exceptional time. But without all the mass murder all day everywhere. At $9-10 trillion and counting now since the dawn of the terror war. That's it. The people don't want it. The Washington Post says the DOD did a study that said the Afghans don't want it. We know the president deliberately ignored a CIA report that told him don't bother surging because it ain't going to fix nothing. And now we know that his Secretary of Defense, who implemented the surge for him, says that the president never believed in the mission at all in the first place. I think that's enough. Now we can go. The war's over, right? That's it. Right? Okay, good. Well, I'll take your silence as affirmation and confirmation that, yep, I finally figured it out. Now is the time we can end the war. At the beginning of 2014, not the end. No Status of Forces Agreement, no other acronym when you replace Status of Forces. They already did. They tried to replace SOFA with something else. Whatever, dude. No pseudo-treaty, no occupation, no special forces, no CIA. Bye, Afghanistan. We're abandoning you now. You're welcome for finally stopping bombing you. And in fact, you know what? We're Americans. We're exceptional. We can pat ourselves on the back and lie all day about what a great job we did bombing those people for their own good. Just stop now, okay? You can call it a victory if you want. You can ignore it when Kabul falls to the Taliban. Just stop now, you know? I don't care what you call it. How about that? That seems like a fair enough trade to me, but call it a victory. Just knock it off. In fact, the sooner you knock it off, the sooner you can call it a victory. In fact, I'll even set it up for you. And no thanks to that Barack Obama, our courageous army won the war over there anyway. All right. Yeah. We won. Okay, now bring them home. That'll be the proof that we really won. Sure we won? I don't know. As soon as I see a big Navy boat pull up with the very last American soldiers and Marines on it, the very last of our CIA spies and State Department weenies, or, you know, you could drop them off in Antarctica too if you want, I guess, but whatever, bring them home and be fine. But just get them out of Afghanistan. Way overdue. All right. And now, hey, listen, I wanted to point out A couple of things real quick on the Iran sanctions issue. First of all, and this is really important, you can find it at Think Progress, but that's not where it really comes from. But Matt Duss wrote it up here and did a pretty good job of it. Israeli military intelligence sees, quote, deep strategic change in Iran. And the bottom line is this, that, and in fact, I have the Haaretz story here. Let me just refer you to Haaretz, the Tel Aviv Daily here. You know what? Here's how to get around their paywall. Click on the printer version. What, did they get rid of the printer version button? I think they might have figured it out that I'd figured them out. Damn. Well, anyway. So there you go. You can read about it at Think Progress, where they copied and pasted the paragraphs you need. Benjamin Netanyahu has been insisting, the president, the prime minister of Israel, has been insisting that the election of Rouhani means nothing. The whole thing was engineered by the evil Ayatollah, a.k.a. the great Satan. He picked the nicest face that he could for Iran's government to replace Ahmadinejad. But it's all a ruse, and that they mean to nuke Israel, and nothing will stop them from nuking Israel other than getting America to bomb them first. Preferably with nukes, too, I guess. And that, as I'm forgetting all the quotes, but you know him. A wolf in sheep's clothing. Oh, he's a wolf in sheep's clothing. Well, that is not what Israeli military intelligence says. And what they're saying is that this guy won the election, fair and square, within the Iranian rules anyway, and that he is not there. He's not put there to mislead us and to be a wolf in sheep's clothing. He represents an authentic leader who is creating his own independent power center of allies with his newfound presidential power in Iran, and he's got a policy. And it reflects the fact that this is the guy Rouhani and his foreign minister, too. These are the guys who originally made the deal to abide by the additional protocol back in 03 through 05 under Khatami. So the Americans can work with them, and that's what the real experts in Israel say. Never mind what the politicians say. That's what Israeli intelligence says. And so anyway, we got to go, but see you tomorrow. Take it easy. Thanks for listening.